Welcome to Bovine Banter with the Penn State Extension Dairy Team. I'm Emily Fred, and I'm a dairy educator based in Union County, PA. Joining us today is Greta Snyder-Hallahan, manager at Singing Brook Farms in Bedford County, PA. Greta is very unique in that she remotely manages her herd from Lebanon County, PA. So Greta, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself and your operation?
Thank you for the introduction. I currently reside in Lebanon County with my husband and my two sons. I was born and raised on Singing Brook Farms in Imler, Pennsylvania. My dad and my brother are the current partners. Bruce and Ross Snyder are the current partners at the dairy. And the way that this all happened is in 2019, my father actually had a heart attack. And while I had grown up working with calves and different things, and I had worked in the dairy industry for about 15 years, I had never directly done any herd management on a dairy. At that same time, our vet was also having some health challenges. And so it had been a few months since they'd successfully had a herd check between my dad's heart attack and the vet being out of commission. So my husband and I prayed about it and discussed it. And we thought, I had two sons under two at the time. We thought that I could go out every other week for the vet checks and I could record things in the computer, write everything down, and help them get organized on that front. And that evolved from there. That was in February of 2019. And by June of 2020, we had decided as a family that I would take full decision-making capabilities over with the herd. And as things evolved, so at this point in time, we have cow manager tags. We installed those. That was sort of my first big thing that we did in 2019. And we installed those. And from then, it's evolved into really, we have a phenomenal team of employees that have bought into the way that we communicate and prioritize protocols so that everything works very smoothly.
That's super interesting. So how many cows do y'all milk?
We milk about 280 cows. So there's between 550 and 600 animals with replacements.
Okay. And do you milk in a parlor?
Yes.
What technologies do you use to help manage the herd remotely? And, you know, what are some of the pros and cons of them?
So the first key piece is the cow manager tags. And the second key piece is we use an app called Slack. And the way that we use that is the Slack, it's kind of, I don't know if you're familiar with Slack at all, but for those that aren't, it's kind of like a bulletin board or like a little, it's a mini text thread for all different categories you can set up. So we have one for when a cow freshens in, everybody on the team is in Slack. So the person that sees that cow puts the cow number, if it was a bull or heifer, if she was given YMPC, and if the calf was given colostrum. And then we have one for the calves. So everyone that's on the calf team can ask questions. We have one for the sick cows every day. We have one for the people that are mixing feed. So the person that's getting the milkers can communicate with them. We have one about the show heifers that my nieces and everything do. There's a lot of different categories, but those are for examples. And I manage the Slack. So I'm able to say who's going to be in which category. Some people can see everything, and some people can see only a select few things. And I believe that communication is one of the biggest challenges that all dairies face. And me working remotely has forced us to excel in that area. And I think one of the confounding things about it is I'm a better manager when I'm in Lebanon than I am when I'm at Singing Brook in some ways. Because it's easy, those systems that we've set up for effective communication, it's really easy to be lax with that when I'm present. But we all are always making sure that everyone knows what's going on. Two of the really interesting things that I think happened, we actually have milkers that are Spanish speaking that are also on the app, and they're in some of the same groups. And we have a category that's every milk pickup, and I also have a category that's butterfat and somatic cell counts. And everybody being aware of those has kind of, it's created a standard and a culture where, you know, prior to 2019, 200 to 250,000 somatic cell count was great for us. And then over some other protocols and things that we worked in with milking, we were able to get that down under 100 and consistently at 100,000. And then what's happened is as I put that in every time, if I put in, oh, somatic cell was 120,000 or 140,000, the milkers are the one that the head milker is the one that responds and says, oh, that's too high. A lot of what's interesting with the communication is that I'm not necessarily commenting on the number or what I'm communicating, but everybody being aware of it, they can take ownership of that in that way. And so that's been one of the really cool things that the clear communication has been crazy. And I'm sure that there's those that think when they first hear about it that it seems over the top, but it's actually very, it's empowering confidence in your work because you lose that feeling of something falling through the cracks and everybody knows what's going on and everybody is active in their roles.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. That's super cool. I mean, I think that is a lot of, problems that farms face when they have employees is that people milking have no idea what the daily somatic cell count is unless there's a huge spike and someone tells them. How many employees are you managing?
We have a head milker and then two other milkers. And then we have a full-time calf feeder, a part-time calf feeder, and a herd health specialist. And then there's some, my brother does a ton of custom field work. And so the guys that mix feed are also the guys that do a lot of that with him. So there's usually two guys that are swapping off on that. He's more doing the direct management of them, but they're also within the loop of the Slack and what they're able to see. And one of the other really cool things about that as well is that everyone gets to have a voice. And I think something that can happen is that if there's always one person communicating everything, you're not really getting the full picture of who your decisions are impacting. So when group two, for example, runs out of feed and the head milker is the one that says that, now there's a connection that that's affecting him.
Right, the message didn't come through you.
Right.
So, are you still at the farm every other week for herd check? How often are
Yes,
you there?
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so I used to go every other Sunday to Thursday. Now that my kids are in school, they're now 6 and 7. Well, he'll be six, the youngest will be 6 in May. So I usually go Monday and then come back Wednesday right now. And then in the summer, we'll be able to do longer trips. And the herd checks are very, I will continue to do that. In my opinion, that's what allows me to keep the pulse on the herd and really see the patterns in what's happening.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it also sounds like you have some pretty good employees too that are really dedicated. Have they been with the farm for a while,
We have a
most of them?
wonderful set of employees. The head milker has been with us probably 15 or 16 years. The calf manager and the herd health specialist have both been there about 5 years, I believe. They sort of started with me. Our approach is not one size fits all. It's not for everyone, but they're wonderful.
We're here to talk about reproduction today. So, how has your repro program changed with the implementation of Cow Manager?
The first thing that Cow Manager allowed us to do was we were already, my dad was trying to detect natural heats. So we were already pretty big proponents of doing natural heats. And when we first started, I mean, immediately we were able to get just about everybody that wasn't pregnant pregnant. And that's been very consistent. But my strategy is to breed on natural heats as much as possible. So we have, protocols in a system where we make sure that from a reproductive standpoint and from a metabolic health standpoint, a fresh cow is up and running and out the gate, and I know she's cycling. And then, with after that voluntary waiting period, we're ready to breed her on a natural heat. If she gets into that voluntary waiting period and something has happened and she's not cycling properly, and I can see that, that is when I will use a time sink or put a protocol in there to do that. One of the other things reproductively it's helped us do is we've started to experiment doing some embryo work on cows that consistently have twins. So we're able to see that heat and then put an embryo in 7 days later. Or when our vet comes at vet check, we can see what sides and everything that the scales are on, but it allows us to target those animals differently.
Yeah, that is super smart to do. Can you tell us about some of the work that you guys have done with genomics recently?
Yeah, I'd love to. My genetic strategy has evolved over time. I stand in the shadows of giants of the breed, and it's very intimidating to look at the work that was done before me and even begin to think how I could contribute. And when I started in 2019, we put the cow manager tags in. Understanding our heifer population and managing the heifers effectively was one of our first priorities. And that was from, I thought from the time they were on the ground to when they freshened in the herd, but really that's from the time that you put semen in the dam until the time she's entered the milking herd. To me, that is the period that I'm managing. And so we started to focus on that. And at the time, it wasn't practical to genomic test everybody. So in the fall of 2020, we just started genomic testing every first calf heifer that was on the, or every heifer that hit the ground. And we used the numbers to control heifer population and make sure that that stayed where it wanted to. The genomics have over time helped us to understand what our strengths are, what our weaknesses are. I love genomics. I think that the mistrust that exists out there a lot of times is in the wrong thing. There's a lot of opinion in how the numbers should be interpreted, and that's okay. My view of how to interpret the numbers to into an application on farm is always evolving. But a cow's numbers are what they are. What they mean is up for interpretation, but they are what they are. And so when you have that consistent baseline, you're able to see, hey, in what areas, for example, because we come from a historically really high type herd, we have a lot more DAs than what you would expect. And the genomics actually back that up. So, like, if you look
That's
at our genomic
interesting.
benchmarking trends, like, we're far above average or below average, whatever you want to look at it, for the number of DAs that you should have. So, that's just a number that I can be conscious of. And that's impacted how we manage fresh cows. If we know that we're at a higher risk, maybe we can implement some protocols. Maybe we find that it's better just to deal with it as they come, but it gives us the full picture. We know that genetics is a strong contributing factor, even though the fresh cow management, the dry cow management are too. We can account for that. So it's allowed for us to do that.
That makes sense. What are some specific traits that you're targeting right now to focus on? Do you have a few?
I do.
Or,
I have a
yeah.
few. I mean, I'm trying to breed the perfect Holstein cow, of course. That's the goal. So there's a couple versions of that, what that is. My sons are now getting into showing, and my nieces are getting into showing. So there's a little group of pretty girls that I'm just working on making beautiful. My goal is to breed, we're still, we started to classify again, is to breed a very balanced cow that has excellent health traits and excellent reproduction. What I love to do is, we're in the next gen program with Select Sires. What I love to do is, we get the heifer calf on the ground, and now I have her genomics. If I can get those genomics back before the dam's ready to breed back, I can look at the dam, the sire, and the calf, and I can see what happened. I'm looking for repro numbers. I've started to hone in a little bit more on CCR, which is the cow conception rate, because the heifers usually, that heifer number can actually be lower than the cow number sometimes, even though it wouldn't seem that way. I focus on that more than DPR. I'm always looking at the health traits, always. And then I want to see to balance in the type number. So in the feet and leg, udder composite, and the actual final type score. I like to see some balance there. In my opinion, that, and by balance, I mean some consistency at the cross. I don't want it to be extreme either way. So that's what I'm working for on the majority of the herd. Of course, you can never go wrong with udders, because as my dad and I have talked, at the end of the day, it's feet and legs and udders make or break you.
That is the truth.
Udder health, I guess I should say.
So, what sort of semen are y'all breeding to? Are you breeding a percentage of your herd to beef at
Yes.
all?
So
Okay.
I'm using the genomics. So I actually now have genomically tested heifers that are having their second calf. The primary driver is I sort them genomically by what I'm looking for to select the ones for sex semen. And then I go back through the list and say, who have I missed? Like, there are some cow families that are a hit every time, no matter what you do. And there's some that is a miss every single time, no matter what the papers say. And that's where we don't understand yet enough into epigenetics in how our management is affecting the expression of the traits. We just don't understand that. And that's one of the other challenges with the genomics and the interpretation is, a cow with a certain set of genetics might excel on my farm and not on yours. And why? The answer is, we don't know. When I'm going through and selecting, there will definitely be cow families that I know are winners that, even if I might bump another heifer off the select sexed semen list and put her on it, because I know that they win every time. They don't get mastitis. They have sound feet and legs. They are long lasting. And we've really worked on peak milk and heifers in order to drive our overall rolling herd average. But the best way to increase our herd rolling herd average is to get a cow to her third lactation. That's really the best way. I need them to last three, four, five lactations. And that's where those cows that win every time, I'm more concerned about that even than like what the milk production number might say genomically. Because if she makes it to her third lactation, she has the genetic capacity to make milk.
And then she's actually going to start making you some money too.
I think that there's a delicate balance there between milk potential and longevity potential.
Are there any challenges that the farm has faced over the years when it comes to repro? Looking back.
Yeah, looking back, I think, always detecting natural heats is a tricky thing. I think one of the challenges that we face, up until 2003, my grandfather was the primary driver of the whole entire genetic strategy, and it was very consistent. And then as different people came in and were the herd manager and had their own strategy, it was a little bit more piecemeal together. Not that any person did anything right or wrong. It just was not a consistent strategy. And so I think kind of sorting that out was a little bit of a challenge. And I think that I'm not surprising or offending anyone by saying that generally a higher type animal hasn't been bred for reproduction. So that's the other piece of the balance that you're trying to do there is how can we introduce more of those health traits, more of those what people would maybe call a commercial type trait into these higher type cows and get a nice balance that's a real working animal that my dad still likes to see in the barn.
So going forward, do you have any changes you're planning on making to your repro program? Are you happy with how it's going right now? I mean, it sounds like it's going very well, so.
I'm always making tweaks, I guess, to everything and lasering down on it. I work really closely with our genetic specialist from Select. I hope I'm using the right title. I will continue to make changes as I see the results of my strategy play out in real life. And it's so tricky because the investment that when I talk about putting semen in a cow and that being where that investment starts, it truly isn't until I see if they made it to their third lactation that I really understand if what I wanted to happen. And I know that there's talk out there in the genetic world and different people that are marketing semen and doing different things that we have so much data on first lactation animals when it comes to type and genetics, but where does it go from there? And that's the piece that I'm trying to hone in on. And it's what are the combinations that win long term at Singing Brook? And I can't answer that yet. If I could, I could. If anyone could answer that, it would make my job easy, but I'll continue to tweak things as that come. But I mean, in terms of using the Angus semen and the sex semen, I think that's been a huge success for us. I did at one point need to tweak a bit the amount of sex semen I was using in the mature cows. You want the goal to be, you want every calf to have a purpose. So you want a heifer calf out of these cows and Angus out of these cows. But that affected our repro raise a little bit. And so I had to use a little bit more conventional semen, adjust there. And it's hard to say, it's hard to justify in your mind sometimes putting in conventional semen when an Angus calf is bringing $700. But there's a balance there. There's a balance there that we definitely, it's more important in some instances that I get her pregnant in a timely manner than it is that I have that Angus calf
Yeah, that
or
makes
this
sense.
or the actual Holstein sexed heifer. So yeah, it's there's always tweaks to be made.
Well, if you end up making the, perfect Holstein, I think that you will be a very sought after person.
I'm doing my very best with the tools that I have and the experience that I have and the herd that my grandfather built. And that's been one of the most rewarding things for me is I never saw myself following in his footsteps at all because I never felt that I had the capacity that he had. And it's been wonderful to be able to use the tools that are available now. Number one, I've gotten a fantastic peek into what he was really doing. We tested a heifer recently and she tested super. It just, I was really excited about the numbers. And I went back and she went back to the Mandy family, which was my grandfather's, flagship family on both sides of her genetics. She would go back, she went back to the 60s. And that was a really emotional and exciting moment for me. I mean, that heifer is not significant in the whole entire population of the herd in the United States. But for me, it was a really special, significant little moment on my computer where I could say, look what we did and look how the past is connected to where we are today.
That is really cool.
Something else that's been very, very significant in this journey that I think is of note is that my dad has been so generous with me and he has allowed me to figure out things even when it's not the direction that he would have gone. So I know that there's times I can always tell when I've selected a bowl that he's not a big fan of because that semen gets used dead last. But he's allowed me to do that. He's allowed me to make mistakes and find my wins and find my ways to do that. And I think that it's helped me to grow faster in my role because I don't feel the frustration there. He's always just encouraging me to keep getting better, and he enjoys the successes with me, and he likes to tease me about the ones that were a little bit of a flop. But I think that that's been a really important key to that, is letting me have ownership and do that.
That is awesome. I think that is where a lot of farms struggle in the transition, is that older generation struggles to give up the reins.
And I've made
Yeah.
mistakes, make no mistake about it. But I think that the successes come faster when you get the mistakes out of the way.
Well, I think that was a great way to wrap this up, but do you have any take-home messages for our audience?
I'm truly grateful for the time that I've had with my dad and the time that I've been able to do that. And I know that dairy farming, whether you're doing it the way that I'm doing it or you're in a more traditional role at the farm, it's a lot sometimes. And it doesn't always feel like there's a lot of wins. But when I look back and see how grateful I am, I think it's just a reminder to all of us that what a fun, rewarding industry that we're in, and to not lose sight of that.
I feel like sometimes you can't just look back at last week. You need to look at back at the last few years and
The other thing I was going to say is, no matter what else I've said, fix your colostrum protocol. If I was
that's
able to
something that
give
you
one
struggle.
piece of advice for a dairy farmer, fix your colostrum protocol. That's it.
I think that's good advice. Thank you, Greta, for talking with us today, and thanks to all of our listeners. If you have any further questions regarding this topic, you can email me at evf 5337 at psu.edu. Don't forget to tune in next Tuesday when I talk to fellow dairy educator Craig Williams about DMC signups.